The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, let's have some fun. No Gil Alexander this morning on a numbers game. Joe Cirillo here in for Gil alongside Kelly Bidlin, the legend, my man. We're going to have a great 2 hours together as we continue to get ready for Super Bowl 59. A lot of other action going on in the world of sports. How about the great guests that we've got for this edition of a numbers game? Paul Carr going to join the show shortly as we break down some weekend Premier League action. We'll look at the matches going on the pitch the next 2 to 3 days, as well as some futures market action as well. Dallin Cuff going to join the show to kick off hour two of the program as we look at a locked and loaded college hoop slate for the weekend to come. Kelly, how are you, my man? I'm excited to be working with you. First time since August.
It's been a little bit. It's great to have you in, Joe. Gil with a day off, so he gets to enjoy that, doing some things in the big city. In the big city this weekend is Gil Alexander. So good to have you in, Joe. I was wondering about something, and I love that we get to keep the crew on their toes on a Friday, because I'm like, you know, whenever I watch Joe Cirillo and Cashing Out at Home, I think to myself, Joe looks like a louder guy in the studio, and I'm a louder guy, so that might be quite a test for Darnell, our audio op today. So Darnell, happy Friday, man. You get to deal with that.
Gonna just see who can be the louder co-host here for the next 2 hours. Look, when you're doing 3 hours solo every night, you've got to keep the energy, all right?
That's right.
I can't have the team in the back falling asleep when I'm doing this thing from 8 to 11 p.m. most nights, but I'll try to keep it a little more tame here for the next 2 hours. Kelly, let's get into it. The 59th big game, just over a week away. I'm sure you and Gil have been breaking it down all week when you're not talking about my pro tennis playing lookalike here on the program. But let's get into some prop bets that we like off the top here. Kansas City, Philly. First off, we've got the new Super Bowl betting guide out right now, VSiN.com. If you're a pro subscriber, you've got to get on that. So I know everyone's got their score and their Super Bowl MVP pick in that. What did you submit for that, Kelly?
Oh, that was, I had Chiefs. Let's see if I can remember the exact final score I put in. 31-27, I believe, is what I put in for the Kansas City Chiefs. So, yes, Chiefs to cover, and the over is where I'd be looking. And just looking at side and total here, Joe, I think really the story of the week so far, look, it's the Super Bowl in 2024. We don't see a lot of movement on these numbers usually when it comes to side and total in the first week. We'll see some usually after that opens, and then it usually gets quiet for a bit, and then maybe it will change a little bit as we get closer to the game. I think the surprise to me, though, is that this total is still hovering around 49. 48.5, 49 is where we're seeing at basically across the board. DraftKings with a 48.5. Everywhere else I'm looking at on my odd screens, 49 right now. A couple key offshores at 49.5, but I think we're going to see this go up. I'm a little surprised we still haven't hit 50, mainly across the board. Not a bet for me yet, but I'm watching this total, because if it gets to 48 or below, I'm probably jumping in with a little bit of money on the over in this game.
I mean, wouldn't you have to? Like, the fact that this was 49.5 a minute ago and now it's already ticked down, there's got to be buyback incoming, and I would expect tons of it, frankly, because when I was capping this one, when I was figuring out where my numbers would be, I had 51.5 to 52.5. as the total in this game. I mean, look, I know Kansas City has a great defense. Steve Spagnuolo, you can never go against him in the Super Bowl. Like you, I'm on the Chiefs in this one as well. But at the end of the day, you could have a Steve Spagnuolo defense on one side. You could have Vic Fangio's number one defense in the NFL on the other side. You know these offenses are going to put up fireworks. You know Mahomes is going to get his, and you know Saquon and Jalen Hurts and AJ. I mean, they just have too many weapons to be denied.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's a really interesting matchup. I know there's a little bit of Chiefs fatigue out there. I get it to a degree. If you've been betting on them or you're a Kansas City fan, you don't have any fatigue, that's for sure. But I think it's a fascinating matchup, because I think the biggest singular mismatch in this game is that Philadelphia defensive front versus this Chiefs offensive line that's had to, you know, move around some pieces there. It's got a little weaker in the middle, and really interested to see how those defensive tackles of Philadelphia look to blow up this game on that side of the ball. But I think what that's going to mean for the Chiefs offense is they're going to be throwing it a little bit more than what we're used to this regular season. We know the Chiefs save some of the good plays for these type of games anyways, so I expect to see some fireworks there. And man, don't look now, but this Chiefs rush defense is not what it was at the middle of the year, beginning of the season. And Saquon Barkley, he could eat again in this game. It wouldn't surprise, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, look, I'm not playing the 115.5 for Saquon. These totals are just coming in astronomically high week after week. But what you said about Kansas City's run defense, James Cook, you can argue part of the problem with Buffalo in the AFC Championship game was they didn't feed James Cook enough. Kansas City sold out to stop Josh Allen's legs, and they were very successful in doing that. I mean, what was he, 0 for 4 on tush pushes?
Yep.
I know he had the one where he went over the top, but when he actually tried to go behind his left guard's rear, they were 0 for 4 on such plays.
But even think about that going over the top, Joe. They were so much in his head, right? They're in, they were in the Bills' head from stopping that, that Josh Allen had to go over the top at midfield, which, like, you should never do, because that ball can get smacked out of there. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what they were talking about, because I think, didn't he fumble it on that play? And then he recovered his own fumble. But exactly, that's a goal line only play right there out of Allen. And Kansas City just did a great job selling out to stop him. But James Cook, while he was limited, just 13 carries, he got his almost 90 yards on 13 carries. So I think if you're the Chiefs right here, you've got to sell out to stop someone. Are you going to sell out to stop Saquon, or are you going to sell out to stop Jalen Hurts and not let him beat you with his legs? You make Jalen Hurts throw the ball, and then our predictions come to fruition. You win the game. I mean, look at Jalen Hurts' Super Bowl 57. He was 27 of 38, 305 yards. Statistically, he had a really good performance. But because he had to throw the ball damn near 40 times, I think that's what sunk Philadelphia. You look at Hurts in the playoffs, in his three losses, they're also the only three playoff games he's ever thrown 30 or more attempts in. He's never had to throw the ball 30 times in a postseason win. He's done it in all three of his postseason losses. So with that said, can I interest you in any Jalen Hurts overs on completions or attempts?
It's interesting, because I have no bets yet on the Philadelphia prop side, because I think I would be more interested in getting involved with those live, Joe, because I want to see how they attack this game for offensively, Philadelphia, because I do think given the problems with stopping the run for Kansas City recently, I think Philadelphia is going to try to run. Like you're talking about, though, I'm not going to be shocked at all if Kansas City kind of sells out to load up the box, try to stop the run. And then Jalen Hurts also have struggled this season against the blitz. So even on passing downs, I expect the Chiefs to be sending guys. I think you're going to see a lot of Chiefs defenders near that line of scrimmage. And like you're talking about, it that opens up the possibility of one-on-one coverages or looser zone coverages on the outside for A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. We know the Chiefs have struggled against tight ends. You've heard that probably a million times already this week.
Yeah.
Dallas Goedert, I know there's a lot of bets on overs out there. So it could end up equaling a huge Jalen Hurts game. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I got to see how the Chiefs are going to wind up, though, against this Eagles offense first, and then I would maybe be more interested in getting in on live props. Remember, we got live everything these days. There's no reason you have to bet anything pregame when you've got all these live options.
So I'm in a similar position as you, Kelly, where so far the four plays that I have in pocket in the prop market are all on the Kansas City side.
Yeah,
all four of them.
Yep.
But I will, it's a matter of when, not if, I will be doing something fun with Jalen Hurts, because if you go up the ladder on his attempts and his completions, now this is courtesy of our friends at DraftKings right now, his over-under on completions, 18.5, right? And that's plus 102 to the over. If you go for just one more completion, 20 plus, right? If you take over 18.5, obviously you're looking for 19. So if you go 20 plus, you're getting 30 more cents on that. You're getting plus 133 for 20 or more completions. He had 27 in Super Bowl 57. Now on 25 or more completions, you're getting 7-1 on that. It's not a full unit play for me, but I'd be remiss not to sprinkle something on that when he had 27 the last time these two squared off in the Super Bowl. Attempts also, this is probably my favorite, 30 or more attempts plus 160. I just feel like he's going to have to throw the ball. Kansas City is going to make him win this game with his arm. They are not going to let him and Saquon win it with their legs. Steve Spagnuolo is too good. Andy Reid and this team, they've been there, done that. You know, that would be such a rookie mistake if they let Philly win this game with their legs, and this team's just been around too long to let that happen.
Yeah, the completions versus attempts is always an interesting conversation. I know that there's others on the Mahomes side that I've heard. We've had guests on the show this week that have been on both, either attempts or completions when it comes to Mahomes. And with Hurts, I think the attempts is usually all about game script to me, because it is okay, what are the Eagles offense going to have to do? And then attempts always becomes a little bit more valuable too if you think a team's going to be playing from behind, right? When they're going to be forced to throw the ball. So I don't hate either one of those. Again, I'm going to wait to see live, but it wouldn't shock me at all if that's how the game played out. Simply, Joe, because if you're the Chiefs and Spags, the one thing you can't have happen is that you lose the Super Bowl because Saquon Barkley ran all over you.
Right. And look, we're both on Kansas City. You said, 31-27? Yeah. My score was 30-24. I think I had the most lopsided Chiefs win in the entire betting guide, KC so by true. Six. But if we're both on Kansas City, then that would certainly feed into the over on attempts. If Philadelphia is playing from behind, Hurts is going to have to throw the ball. All right, just over a minute to go here, Kelly. We both like Kansas City. We both like points. Given our final score predictions, we'd both be on the over. Anytime touchdown plays, who gets in the end zone for our Chiefs?
Oh, man, great question. I haven't bet any of those yet. Kareem Hunt would be a look for me early.
Six straight playoff games with Kansas City he scored? Is that the number?
I believe that is correct. We're going to have to talk our Chiefs props here, but the ones I've attacked so far are the rushing props. I played Kareem Hunt as soon as they came out. Kareem Hunt over on his rushing yardage, and then Isaiah Pacheco under on his longest rush of the game. I jumped on those early. This could change. I bet these similar props. I bet them a little heavier in the AFC Championship game, Joe, because it had become very apparent, and I think it was very obvious after the AFC Championship game, that Isaiah Pacheco ain't fully healthy yet, or he ain't fully right with this offense yet, and Kareem Hunt's got a lot more burst back there for them. So wanted to target the overs on him, unders on Pacheco. The only hesitancy for me, it's 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks off, 2 weeks more for Pacheco to maybe get a little healthier if that is a problem. So dialed back a little bit, but those are the ones that I bet.
Last time these two teams met, everyone was worried about that Mahomes high ankle sprain. He had 2 weeks off, ran rampant against the Philadelphia Eagles. We were on Mahomes in that one. I've got a Mahomes rushing prop in this one I love, and you'll hear about it on the other side. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo. It's a numbers game. More to come.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Folks, get ready for Big Game 59 with a big deal to match. You can score $59 off a VSiN Pro annual subscription when you sign up using the promo code ANG. For just $1.81, you'll get a full year of VSiN Pro access to everything we offer, which includes daily best bets, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access, and so much more, like our all-new Super Bowl betting guide with expert picks, predictions, and prop betting strategies to help you win big. This special offer ends after the Super Bowl, so don't miss out. Sign up now, VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code ANG to get a full year of VSiN Pro for just $181. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. A numbers game continues. I'm Joe Cirillo in for Gil Alexander on this beautiful Friday morning. He's Kelly Bidlin, of course, alongside myself here at the desk. And now we're going to take you to the Progressive Guest Line. It's time for some soccer talk with our guy Paul Carr from True Media Sports joining the program. Paul, how are you? Let's open up with the draw from the Champions League this morning. What was your biggest takeaway from that?
Yes, this is the draw for they call it the playoff round. It's basically the round of 32, but there's only 8 matchups because 8 teams got byes to the round of 16. The headline is very clearly Manchester City against Real Madrid. Both underachieved a little bit during the league phase, so they fell down and then got drawn against each other here. They're meeting for the 4th straight time. Man City was the favorite before the season began. They've really struggled, so they're not right now. And Real Madrid is the defending champion and seems to win every year. So you've got two of the, 5 best clubs in the world on the whole playing in this round, and one of them obviously won't advance. So that's your headline by far.
All right, Paul, you've been red hot on the show. I believe it was 2-1 the other day in Champions League again. Want to start here with a question Tim Lawson tweeting into the show, as he often does, always appreciate. Oh. Said, how much consideration does Paul Carr give midweek Europe tournament matches when handicapping weekend EPL matches? Is player rest a factor after several matches in 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's a thing for sure, especially if there's an extra day or two for one team or the other. Obviously, it depends on lineups. You look at a team like Liverpool this week, and they rotated heavily because their Champions League game didn't mean much. So, obviously, that doesn't really factor in. It's a thing. It's, I would say, maybe a little bit. It gets to be more of a thing later in the season, where the legs are just getting more tired. And it also depends on the squad. You know, a team like Aston Villa, which is in Champions League for the first time and just doesn't quite have the depth, or Man City, really, because you could argue, you know, they don't have the depth either. It's not going to slow me down this week, as we'll get to. But it's always something you got to keep in mind. Who played, how much they played, how thin or deep is this team? It's always something you have to factor in.
Yeah, Paul, you pretty much took care of the segue right there. Let's get into that Man City contest on Sunday, taking on Arsenal. You find a lot of value in this match, huh?
Yeah, this is the big one of the weekend, and I'm not sure I've bet on Man City all season. I've been fading them pretty heavily and successfully, at least since October. So, but I like the price on a Man City win at Arsenal. It's at plus 270, and for a little context, when they played last season at Arsenal, City was plus 150. To win the game. And yes, City is not as good as they were. I'm not sure Arsenal's as good as they were either. They certainly are not in attack as good as they were last year because Bukayo Saka is injured and they don't even have Gabriel Jesus to either come off the bench or start up top. So I'm just not sure that Arsenal, they definitely don't have the firepower. I would put it this way. If you were picking a combined lineup of these teams, you might take Arsenal's whole back four and maybe their midfield, but you would take City's attacking front three. So that's kind of where you're going to see a strength versus strength matchup here. City's attack has been clicking lately. De Bruyne is healthy. Foden is looking like Phil Foden again after a pretty awful first half of the season. So again, it's plus 270. I'm not saying Man City's definitely winning this game, but I think that price has just gotten too inflated. And given Arsenal's limited attacking options and abilities, I think it's a pretty good price to get here.
Yeah, if you've been listening to this show throughout the season so far, you have not heard Paul Carr on Man City at all and against him against Man City very often. Yeah. So surprising play there. You know it's a good price sticking out to Paul. Let's start with Saturday. I know you got three bets for us. We got Everton taking on Leicester here. What do you like in this game? Match.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You can call it a game. That's okay. We're in America. we can use either one.
I thought I'd be the first one to make that blunder.
No, it's all good. Well, this is a conversation that would come up a lot at ESPN and all the TV I've worked on. You call it what you call it, you know? If I try to use certain British soccerisms, footballisms, then it sounds like I'm trying too hard or my tongue gets tangled. So it's just really what's natural. And, you know, we can all be adults here and know that there's different terms that mean the same thing.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the fixture, though. Yeah. The specific fixture.
When in doubt, contest.
Yeah. So Everton, Leicester City. I'm not sure I've bet Everton all season either, but I have faded Leicester City a lot. I mean, they're newly promoted. They're relegation threatened for a reason. That's just kind of the caliber of team that they have. Everton has been in that relegation battle for much of the season. They're still kind of there, but they've stabilized a bit. David Moyes, their former manager, who was manager when Tim Howard and such were there, is back. He took over three games ago. He's got two wins and a competitive loss against Aston Villa and really just stabilized the defense, especially. They're giving up worse shots. I mean, that's a good thing for a defense, and they're generated enough offensively to create a few good chances per game, convert one or two, and get 3 points. Leicester, they have a new manager too, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who was a Manchester United star, but doesn't have a lot of managerial experience. They've been almost less attacking under him than they were before. Six shots per game on the road under van Nistelrooy. And most of those opponents were a little bit better than Everton. But again, Everton's defense has been better the last few games. I just like Everton to straight win this. They're the better team. They're at home. Minus 130 isn't too juicy for me.
He's Paul Carr with us on the Progressive Guest Line right now. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Paul Carr. Check out the Expected Value podcast. You've given out a couple of sides for the weekend, Paul. How about a total? What do you like in the Tottenham match on Saturday? Or Sunday, Brentford, excuse me.
Yes, this one's Sunday. Brentford-Tottenham. Brentford, both these teams have really been not quite over machines, but pretty close so far this season. So I like over 3.5 at minus 120. I don't know what the result is going to be here. Like, if you told me it's 4-0 either way, or 3-3, be like, sure, yeah, I can see that. But I think there's going to be goals. Both teams, top six in goals scored, bottom seven in goals against, and all the underlying numbers support similar things. Tottenham gives up really good shots, so that's obviously bad for a defense. Brentford is more patient, takes best shots, finds good transition opportunities, and Tottenham's defense has been not that great in that situation especially. Brentford, like I said, not a defensive juggernaut. They've allowed the most shots in the league. So all that to say, both teams decent to good in attack, not so good defensively. Tottenham is very thin because of injuries. Like, half their ideal starting lineup is out. I think the second half especially could get open as these teams kind of wear down and things get a little bit crazy. So over 3.5, -120, my Brentford Tottenham pick on Sunday.
I like it. Paul, I wanted to talk to you real quick about top goal scorer for Premier League. I know we hit on this a few weeks ago. This race is really, really fascinating. You got Mo Salah right now with 19, Erling Haaland 18, and then Alexander Isak with 17. Haaland even money right now. Mo Salah +110. Isak 5-1. Anything on the board there that you think has some value to bet right now?
Yeah, a couple kind of conflicting takes, but Isak 5-1 is your longer shot if you want it. He took a penalty last weekend, which we kind of thought he would, but he hadn't taken one so far this season for Newcastle, in part because they'd only had one all season. So that's a good sign. You know, Isak has a chance to make a run if anyone's coming from deep. The flip side is, like, look, Erling Haaland is even money. I mean, he was juicy before the season. I forget, it might have been like -150, maybe worse, for him to win Golden Boot. And City's attack is getting healthy. Mentioned De Bruyne is back. So, I mean, even money on Haaland, like, that's pretty tempting that he could just rip off another, you know, 10 goals in 7 games type of thing like he can so easily. Because he hasn't been bad this season, even though that's the perception. Because, look, he's right there at the top of the Golden Boot race. So I don't hate putting something on him at even money, because I don't know if you'll see that good a price on him the rest of the year.
Paul, I'm curious, before we let you go here, you gave out a pretty juicy value play with Man City earlier on in the segment. Any other value on the card this weekend? I mean, you mentioned the Brentford-Tottenham game. Would you, at +225, want to take Tottenham there? You said you could see that one go 4-0 either way. Any other value? Any dogs that really have your eye?
Yeah, Tottenham, no. I don't trust Tottenham that much. One of the other big games of the week is Bournemouth against Liverpool. Bournemouth's at home. They've been playing like a top 6 or so team this season. Pretty tempted there. The draw's at +320. Anytime you get a draw over 300, that's pretty enticing to me. So there, if you wanted a safer play, you know, Bournemouth double chance, +115 or so, I don't hate. But if you're looking for another long shot, Bournemouth-Liverpool draw at +320 is probably where I'd go.
I love it. And seeing as high on Bournemouth as +360 now in the market on DraftKings. He's our guy, Paul Carr. Thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you hopping on.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Paul Carr. Check out that Expected Value podcast. Kelly, how much soccer betting are you doing these days?
You know what? It's always been one of those sports I wish I bet more. Luckily, we have Paul on so often. If you've just been tailing him in those past month or two on the show, you've been doing quite well because he's been on a heater. But it's one of those, it's a fascinating handicap to me. And I love getting involved with sports where it's a really interesting handicap. So
I mean, my only issue, when do these go off? Aren't they 5, 6 a.m. our time on a Saturday
sometimes
morning?
Sometimes they're pretty early. But, you know, you get those bigger games. They're about noon on the West Coast.
Yeah. I mean, I host Cashing Out. I don't get to bet until 2 a.m.
That's right.
I don't know if I'm making it up for that. Going to take a look at Pebble Beach up next. It's a numbers game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Taking you through a Friday morning here on a numbers game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo, and we've got a lot of college hoops to get to, so let's not waste time. Let's take it to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in ESPN's Dallin Cuff, who's going to be on the call tonight in St. Louis. The Dayton Flyers taking on the Billikens. Little A-10 action. I love it. Dallin, how are you, and how excited are you for this conference matchup tonight?
I'm doing well, guys. It's a big game. It's a strange game because this Dayton team, you rewind, you know, 6 weeks ago, they were probably a 6 or 7 seed in the tournament. They've beaten UConn. They've beaten Marquette. Flying high. These guys are struggling, man. They're 4-4 in league play. They're pretty enigmatic. They're coming off a 22-point loss to your boy, Joe, the Bonnies, got them up at the Riley Center pretty significantly. And St. Louis is really good at home, and they've struggled on the road. And St. Louis, the team we thought before the season, this could be like these could be both tournament teams. Like right now, they're playing for really their seeding in the A-10 and a chance to win a championship and looking at basically a one bid league. So there's a lot on the line tonight for both these squads.
Now, do you think there's any potential with the St. Louis team, the way that they're playing, that the A-10 could go back? I mean, look, this is a conference used to get 3, 4, on rare occasion 5 teams in the field of back then it was 64. Any chance this Billikens team with the resume they're putting together could work their way into an at-large in your estimation, or is the A-10 strictly a one-bid league?
It's sad. It's a one-bid league. But like I said, like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you could have seen three or four. Now, yeah. St. Louis didn't necessarily have the path, but your Bonnies did have a record that was really good in the non-league. Now, they didn't have many quality wins. Dayton had the quality wins. It seemed like a lock to have an at-large resume. VCU looks the part. That is the team that I think is interesting in this league, because they look like a tournament team, despite losing at St. Louis midweek in a tough game and a tough environment on the road. They look the part, but they don't have the wins. It's like when you look at the A-10 right now, there's only four quadrant wins the entire league, and Dayton's got two of them. The league has only played 24 games that were quad one games in non-league. Relative to other leagues, that is such a minuscule number that makes it tough for them to put together their resumes. That's why the non-league, they have to win some of these games, and Dayton did that. But now they are struggling. And now when you lose to George Washington by 20, you losing the Bonnies in the road, there's no shame in that. But losing to a George Mason team that didn't have good metrics, that looks like the part right now, but aren't going to be an at-large team, it's unfortunate. League is good. The league is much better in the middle. It's better at the back end, which makes it tougher for the teams at the top to win the games that they have to win to secure that resume. So they're kind of cannibalizing themselves, and it's unfortunate for the league, but it's good basketball every game. It's just they're not going to have more than one team in the tournament, I don't think, unless something crazy happens down the stretch here.
Yeah, it's a good point you made about being a little stronger in the back end. You used to have the gimme games like, you know, a Fordham or a LaSalle, and now Fordham's nothing to scoff at. LaSalle got my Bonnies at the Riley Center, something that I certainly didn't expect to happen. So it definitely is a deeper league, but you're missing the punch at the top. You're into some Ivy League action tonight. What do you like in this Yale-Princeton game, two of the better teams in that conference?
Yeah, I think Cornell may be one of the top two teams too. But coming into the year, this was kind of one of these showpiece games, and to see this is the first back-to-back week in the Ivy League back when I played in it. We did this every weekend. We did six straight weekends of back-to-back, and it was normal. Now it's abnormal for some of these guys. So interested to see how Princeton and Yale both handle this first game, because these two teams were the class of the league. I will say this: Princeton has really struggled to start in games. Like, they have started slow in a lot of league games and non-league games. Now they come in a tear in the back end. And they've got two great players. So Xavier Lee is an NBA player, a 6'4 junior guard, 6'3 junior guard, great change of pace, great vision. Anybody who watched him just carve up Rutgers can see what this guy can do at a very high level. And Caden Pierce, one of the best all-around players in the country. The problem is outside that, they don't have a lot of strength. They don't have a lot of physicality, which is kind of typical for some of their teams. And they lack other scoring outside those two dudes. Yale is built in a different way. They got a bunch of different guys, whether it's John Pulakitis can make shots, Townsend on the inside. They are physical. They are kind of they're the bullies of the Bulldogs are in this league. And I think they can walk into Princeton. I like them in the money line the first half to take the first 20 minutes. As I said, Princeton struggles. And really the spread has moved from 2.5 to 3. I still lean Bulldogs here. I think they are just the flat out the better team. Princeton's home court advantage is not what it once was. To say the fans don't turn out as much, and it's not as an aggressive environment. They can win the game, but I think Yale's the better team, and I think Yale's going to find a way to slow down those two pieces. They have the best coach in the league in James Jones, and the other guy that is vying for that position in Mitch Henderson. So it's the class of the league, but I'm going to lean to the Bulldogs on the road here to walk into Princeton and feel pretty comfortable where they're at. They've had success there in the past and knock off the Tigers.
Dallin Cuff, so much more humble than I would be, Joe. I don't know if you caught it there, that little of when I played in the Ivy League.
I'd
be working that in on every guest spot that I did. But, Dallin's a classy guy, but he keeps it humble.
When I majored in rocket science and dropped 30 a game. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if either of those things were true, I probably wouldn't be talking to you. But I can't add it. I didn't drop 30 a game.
Oh, man. All right, Dallin, let's go to the other one you got tonight. Your old squad at Abs. Action, Harvard at Columbia. What are you looking at in this game?
Oh boy, the Lions, folks. The Lions, we don't like defense. We don't like the guard very much.
Who
needs it? It's kind of the approach. And when you've lost five straight, that becomes a concern. They are laying the points here. I'm going to stay away from the spread because they are an enigmatic team. And Harvard is a team that they had Princeton dead to rights on their floor and just capitulated down the stretch and lost to the Tigers. They've shown some signs of life, but they still just struggle to score. This is one of the best shooting leagues in the country, the second best league, according to KenPom, in terms of effective field goal percentage. That's always kind of been the case in the Ivy League. The difference is Columbia wants to play fast. Harvard wants to play slow. Why I like the over in this game is I don't think Tommy Amaker's scared of these guys at all defensively, and they won't necessarily play fast, but I think they can score relatively easily and relatively quickly compared to the other teams in this league in terms of how Harvard has to go against their defenses. So I'm going to take the over. It has moved. It opened at 146.5. Grabbed it there last night. I think it's crept up a little bit here. in the last couple hours. Overall, you know, Columbia's situation is they're going to play fast, they're going to shoot fast, and they're not going to defend very well. They do that even more so at home. A lot of their games at home have hit the 160 or 170 mark, and that's where they're at today. And this is a game that really Columbia has to win to even have a hope. Remember, guys, the Ivy League tournament now is the top four teams in the league will compete at Brown for the spot to go to the NCAA tournament. Columbia's never been in that top four since they've done this since 2017. And there were hopes that they would get there before once we got to league play. But this league is tough, and they have not defended at the requisite level. And that's why I think that Harvard will be able to score enough. And Columbia will be able to get some baskets, too. Harvard's not very good defensively either. So I think the over is the play here.
Dallin, I want to ask you about the only ranked team in action here tonight. Big Ten rivalry, Indiana-Purdue. It's been a disastrous year for Mike Woodson and the Indiana Hoosiers. Purdue's laying 12 in this spot. Now, they've got back-to-back 20-point wins in the rivalry. Prior to that, Indiana had covered 3 out of 4. Even as bad as the Hoosiers are, you get a feeling they're going to get up for this game, being that in-state old conference rivalry. Is 12 points too many, or would you lay it with the Boilermakers?
Yo, you say they're going to get up. I don't know. I just don't know. Because Indiana, I talk about a team that just, from the most base level of competition, is to suit up and to give everything you have. And Indiana has struggled to do that consistently throughout the course of the year. And they've struggled to do that in big games against big-time opponents. You can go back to the Louisville game in Atlantis, and they didn't show up. You're playing another blue-blood program in the first round of the tournament that you're supposed to be able to maybe advance and make some noise, and you just, you know, kind of quit in the second 20. And we've seen them do this a number of times. So it's by no means a fair foregone conclusion that these guys are going to show up. What I can conclude is that Purdue is going to be ready to play. Their building is going to be on fire. And if they have them down, there is no putting the foot off the gas. So I would actually think that the first half line, I might play a first half and the total, and this first half and the spread total, I should say, both ways. Because I think Purdue is going to be able to control this game. I do wonder if Indiana's got it in them to kind of really fight back. Indiana does not shoot it very well. They don't have. They are very much more interior based, which I think is a bit of a problem with them against this Purdue team. Overall, I think Purdue is the better team that will play that I have more confidence in terms of how they're going to play. The other bet I would look at is Indiana team total under. They have really struggled to score at different times against solid defensive opposition. I think Purdue, given everybody talking about them last year and how great Edie was and what the expectations were, they've kind of flown under the radar in recent weeks. They've been very solid, to say the least. And Trakoff and Ren's been really good. Obviously, the guard play, those guys are now juniors. They continue to improve. So I think this is – I'm all in on the Boilers here. I can't back the Hoosiers just because they've just been – they just lack the ability to show that they deserve my money, for lack of a better term.
Absolutely. And, hey, you're bringing up that Indiana-Louisville game. That was like rubbing salt on the wound. I was on Indiana in that game, and that's the last time I've put money – on these Hoosiers. Dallin, before I let you go, I got to ask you about the big game Saturday morning. Florida, Tennessee, top 10 matchup. Speaking of teams not showing up, not doing the bare minimum, that's what Tennessee failed to do last time they played Florida in Gainesville. Now it's in Knoxville. We don't have a number out on this game yet, but do you think there's a chance for redemption? Tennessee could win this one outright?
It's tough because, man, guys, they struggle to score, man. They really struggle to score. They're shooting 46% from the two-point line in league play. But they're shooting like 40%+ of their shots from three, and they're not really a good shooting team. So I really like the Gators. I think they're a better team. I've talked to you guys. I talked to Bet Live, all these different betting shows I do before the year. The one long shot to win the championship, which I love that bet, was Florida. At that time, you get between 20 and 25 to 1.
Wow.
They have it all. They got great guards. They got great bigs. They can stretch those bigs. Some of them got great offensive rebounding. They are much better defensively. They're tough. They're well coached. I think they outside of Auburn are the best teams in the SEC. I would take Florida over Alabama even so, when you think about them long term in terms of their consistency and what I think they can do in the tournament. So I think they can take the show on the road. I think they can score enough, rebound enough, and they're tough enough to win in Tennessee. And we've seen other teams be successful on Tennessee's floor. We just saw it this week. So Tennessee's got to figure out the offensive piece of this. They don't have a lot of guys that can create shots, a lot of guys that can make shots. And I think this could be a bit of a challenge for them. So I'm leaning Gators, and we'll see what that line is.
Dallin, really appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much, and good luck on the call tonight. Enjoy that Dayton St. Louis game.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
ESPN's Dallin Cuff, kind enough to give us a few minutes while he's doing his game prep. A-10 conference action. Nothing like it, Kelly. Friday night in the A-10, fireball shooters getting thrown onto the court by the rowdy student sections. That's a true story, by the way.
Really?
Dan Hurley had one chucked at him at the Riley Center when I was a student there.
I'm sure.
Not by me.
I'm sure he took it well.
Yeah.
Tell Dan Hurley his hair looks nice. He won't take it well.
Always a mature guy on the basketball court. Absolutely, yeah.
His brother, you know what? I got to say, his brother, Arizona State's not a great hoops team. They've been decent against the number lately. His brother's been a decent bet lately. If you're looking Big 12 late night action,
Keep your eye on that one. Don't sleep
on the Sun Devils. Let's get back to the Super Bowl. Some Super Bowl 59 props up next. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Serralo. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into a numbers game.